I'm pretty confident talking into a mic. Hey, I'm doing it right now. But home projects, I second guess everything. Is that noise normal? Is that water damage? Who do I even call? That's where Thumbtack comes in. Just upload a photo or voice note, and it uses AI-powered search to match you with the right top-rated local pro. So instead of guessing, you get clarity and can hire with confidence. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me. Once again, Stephen Dorff. Just going to move this chair over a bit so I can actually look at you while we're talking. It feels like we're doing like a press conference or something. So, dude, first and foremost, congratulations on being a working actor for literally 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is amazing. It's an amazing thing. Not easy to do. And I want to ask you about the first thing I can remember seeing you in. It was my favorite show when I was a kid. It was called Different Strokes.
Oh, my God.
And you were on a show. The episode was Sam Finds a Grandparent. And Sam was the little white kid that they brought on when Arnold started getting older. Do you remember this?
Like,
first things, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think when I was in my school in Hollywood, because I grew up in Hollywood, and when I did, after I did The Gate, which they found me in my school, that movie, I started doing all this episodic TV, and I ended up finding myself on these sets of these shows, you know, these kind of thin wood sets of these different families of all these shows I grew up watching.
Right.
Know? So like Different Strokes, I watched too, you know. And I loved Gary Coleman as a kid.
Yeah.
So I think when he got sick or when he got older, he moved on, and Danny Cooksey was the son, you know, or the adopted, or another son. And I was a Cub Scout, and I remember it because that show in particular, I was like, I can't believe I'm in rehearsing with this family that I want. It was surreal.
Very surreal.
And then I did, like, you know, Married with Children. I did a few episodes of Roseanne playing the boyfriend. And, you know, you're on these sitcoms and you're like, I always wanted to make movies. So it was for me like an exercise to try to get to where I wanted to get to, you know.
But it's such a rare thing to have a child actor grow up and work and be very successful, because it's hard to be a kid actor, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of kids where, like, you know, the parents were very involved. And, you know, I think what I feel fortunate about is that I grew up in Hollywood and didn't have much money, my family, but my dad started doing well writing songs, and then I started going to school with all these, you know, movie stars' kids, it was around me, and there was this young actors class at the school. There was a, you know, a theater thing every month we would perform, and then there was an agent that came up to my mom. And so for me, it was like my family was very supportive of it, but were nervous, and I was like, no, I want to do it, you know. And my mom was like, yeah, but I'm worried about Steven and the, you know, rejection.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't give a shit. If they don't want me, I'll get the next thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, you know, I think my mom ultimately realized he's good at it. He loves it, as long as he does better in school. So that kind of made me focus a little more on my schooling and these private schools I was going to, which weren't great in LA, to be honest, you know. Nice people, but I wasn't learning much. It wasn't until I really got on the road and started making movies and got out of the bubble of LA that I started really learning and reading books and reading scripts made me want to, you know, and once I got going, that was what it was for me, you know. So.
'Cause you mentioned your dad was writing songs, a very successful songwriter, Steve Dorff.
Yeah.
And I was doing 5 seconds of research, and I, once again, Every Which Way But Loose.
Yeah, that was the song that kind of got my family some money that put me in some of these schools, because he wrote that like when I was, well, I was still young. I was like 2 when he wrote that. But then he wrote, yeah, he wrote like Through the Years, Kenny Rogers. He just wrote like a lot of
George
standards.
Strait song.
Oh, yeah,
a
he's
big
written
one.
All George Strait's hits. Most of them, like, you know, I Crossed My Heart and all the Pure Country stuff. And you know, he's still writing, you know, he's 77, my dad, he's still writing for, you know, Celine Dion and Barbara Streisand.
It's amazing.
You know, Tim McGraw and those
guys. Do you
guys.
Think because he was in show business, that did that help you as a kid? Was he kind of slightly?
It wasn't, I was on the set of one of these movies he was doing a song for, and I was a kid, like around my age, and this is where it kind of clicked for me, because I was like, Dad, is he a young actor? You know, my dad's like, yeah. I said, where does he go to school? You know, because, you know, and he's like, well, he goes to school on the set. And I was like, maybe this is for me, you know. But, and so I really liked the idea of, like, you know, working with adults at a young age. Mm-hmm. And then I got to do it, which was cool. But he didn't really ever get me a gig or anything. You know, I just started going out on commercials. I did He-Man and Skeletor commercials with the action figures. And I did, I mean, you can Google some of these things. They're pretty funny. There's, like, something on Instagram that has all these funny commercials with, you know, actors that are known now that did all these funny
when they
commercials.
Were kids.
Yeah, I mean, I did like a commercial with like Steve Garvey from the Dodgers when he was on the Dodgers.
He was the guy too,
and he was the dude. And I did like a Nestle's Quick chocolate milk commercial with him, and you know, and that led to some TV shows, the Different Strokes stuff, and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, it wasn't until I really turned 17, I finally got my first, you know, big movie, and that was The Power of One, this movie that took me to Africa and worked with Morgan Freeman and all these great actors.
This is amazing, because, not to cut you off, but first of all, you mentioned The Gate, which was another... Yeah.
Quite, that I look at as like my first movie, obviously, because that was the first movie I ever did, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know, like Power of One was like after I'd worked hard to audition, I got close, but I wasn't getting my movie, and then I auditioned for some theater schools, and I got into NYU, Juilliard, all these great schools, but I got Power of One, and I was like, what do I do, Mom? What do I do, Dad? And they're like, what do you really want to do? And I said, well, I love theater, but I don't really have the passion for that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go travel and work with Morgan Freeman and box and make this movie in Africa. I mean, that sounds much more exciting.
It's been time.
So I ended up going with a guardian. I did half the movie. I mean, the whole movie was like a year of my life. And, you know, John Avildsen, great director, did all the, you know, early Rocky movies and Karate Kid. I grew up watching his movies. So he was kind of the king of the underdog movies, you know. And he put a work ethic in me, and he was tough. You know, he wasn't easy.
So let's just talk about that as being you know, you go through the commercials and you're doing some of the sitcoms and stuff, and then you say you go with this John Avildsen movie, who Oscar-winning director, like Steven just said, Rocky, etc., and Morgan Freeman. So you're in the big leagues now. You know, you're not a precocious little rambunctious guy. You're expected to hold up your end of the bargain. Mm. How do you get the hint of that as such a young kid to know, like, you gotta step up your game?
Yeah, I mean, I had some great experiences leading up to Power of One. Like, I did some good TV movie dramas, mm-hmm. and that was kind of like my entry into the theatrical world, you know, and worked with a really great director named Gil Cates, who passed away. He used to be also the head of the Academy, but him and two producers, Jordan Kerner and John Avnet, they really believed in me, and they gave me this great drama called, it was like a TV movie. It was, you know, true story, Do You Know the Muffin Man, I think it was called, and whatever. I had this, like, big emotional scene in it, and, like, I got some, you know, a lot of attention for it in the agents world and all that, And by the time I did my screen test for Power of One, I really was just going on my instincts and what I had learned up until then. You mm-hmm. know? And really, the best acting school is getting to work with great actors
sure.
and great filmmakers. And so for me, you know, I just kept learning. I'm still learning. You know, I just finished a movie with Al Pacino. And, you know, I've learned a lot from Al, you know, and he's 86 now. And mm-hmm. Last year, and I did a movie with Shirley MacLaine in 92. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but it's been the year of the kind of icons in there in an interesting moment. And for me, it's just I've learned so much from the people I've worked with.
All right, football is back, baby, and Prize Picks is a killer deal for you if you download the app and use my code Jericho. And if you win your first $5 lineup, you get $150 instantly in lineups. So I just started using Prize Picks for football,
And it's making the games even more fun because now I'm following what my guys are doing. Like Kyler Murray, I mean, that's one of my guys this year. He's got to come up big for me. I hope so. He just joined Minnesota after spending his first 7 years in Arizona. So my wife and my son and I are hoping for big things. And I'm thinking this dude has something to prove, as the entire team of Minnesota does. New team, fresh start. So I went more on this season, a passing yards projection. Now, every time he gets the ball, I'm watching to see what he does with it. Every drive means a little bit more. That's what I love about Prize Picks. And it's super, super easy. If I can figure it out, you can too. You just pick your players, go more or less on their projections, make your lineup, and you're in. It's that literally that simple. And your lineup can be as little as two guys or up to six players. So if you download the app today and use the code Jericho, you get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. That's code Jericho to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game.
Who were some of the more influential actors and directors that really left an impression on you that you still think of to this day when you're doing a part?
Well, my favorites. Nicholson, you know, Jack. I mean, he was my favorite kind of growing up as I started watching movies and learning about cinema. And he's my favorite to this day, you know.
Have you worked with him?
Yeah, I did a movie with Jack when I was right before Blade. It was when I was about 25. And we did a movie called Blood and Wine. It wasn't a huge hit, but it was J-Lo's first movie. It was... Michael Caine was in it. I mean, it was awesome. And I was the kid, and I was just sitting there one day with Jack on one side and Michael Caine, and I was like, yes, this is where I want to be. And I had turned down more commercial movies when I was young because I wanted to do the real shit. I didn't really care what was going to be a hit, or I didn't really care. I still don't really care about that. If it moves me, I want to make it. And
to me,
a good movie will come around. I mean, a perfect example of that is... this tiny little movie I did 4 or 5 years ago in COVID, end of COVID time, like 4 years ago, I guess. Old Henry was a Western, and I did it, and it, you know, I've gotten like 100 texts in the last 24 hours in LA about this movie because I guess it's number one on Netflix, and I'm like, what?
Which one?
It's called Old Henry, and it's actually a brilliant movie. I mean, it's like 98% Rotten Tomatoes, but now it's like all over the press, and this little movie's beating, you know, their own movies that they've spent, you know, millions on. And this was a little movie I made with a great character actor named Tim Blake Nelson, and. That's kind of cool. So, like, to me, it's really, you know, you could do a $100 million movie, small movie, big movie. I've learned so much from both genres, and I just love making great movies, you know. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's kind of fewer and far between, you know. It's a kind of, most things are reenactments of other movies that we've seen, remakes, you know.
Sequels,
genre
reboots,
movies,
yeah.
You know. But, you know, once in a while, there's a great script, and, you know, and it's just about, you know, as an actor, you just want to keep making good ones.
Pushing yourself, yeah. Is there anything that you turned down that you wish you hadn't of? Because being in that age group, there's so many of those 80s, early 90s movies.
Yeah, there's a few big ones I f***ed up on. Yeah, I was an interesting kid. You know, I was an interesting kid when I was in school, and I was my mom's kind of worst nightmare. My little brother Andrew, who's passed away, 7 years ago, but he was my only sibling. He was a brilliant songwriter too in Nashville and wrote a lot of Blake Shelton's hits, and brilliant kid. And why did I bring up Andrew?
I was asking what you turned down.
Oh yeah, so I kind of messed up a few times. I mean, there was like early things. I mean, Andrew was like, oh, that's what it was. Andrew was like the perfect kid, you know, perfect student, perfect, very quiet, very, and I was the crazy one, you know. And I kind of didn't always do the right thing. But, like Boogie Nights was a movie I could have done, you know, the lead in it. You know,
wow, the Diggler part?
Yeah, I could have done, you know, probably, what was the other one? My manager at the time, Bo Shute, who's a genius. She started a lot of great young actors. She started the Fannings. She started Neil Patrick Harris. She I mean, she had every Maya Bialik, you know, all these great big TV stars. She was a killer for young talent, and she was my first manager. And she told me Guy Ritchie, she thought was going to be big, and she had this script called Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And I was like, I don't know what this is. You know, I want to do this one. And she's like, Stephen, I really think you should go to England and make this little movie. These guys are smart. And so I ended up there too. But you know, Guy Ritchie, I think last time I saw him, he still was like, "You turn me down, mate." I mean, you know, you never can. Every actor has stories of what they
turned down,
from Pacino to Jack. I mean, there's so many cool stories of movies. You know, yeah, you know, it's an interesting game. You know, it's really out of your control.
Yeah, you never know.
It's kind of how the cookies fall. But I'm really blessed. I've worked with a lot of my heroes. There's still a lot more I want to work with. I'm anxious to work with younger, new talents, and you know, keep it going. I never used to play the dad. Now I'm playing a dad, even though I'm not a dad, but I think I'm playing a pretty good dad. But, I don't know, you know.
Did you have any, you kind of avoided the traps that a normal child actor would have of, you know, partying and you know, substances and that sort of thing. How were you able to avoid that and becoming, you know, a casualty, sadly, that happens so many times with child actors?
I mean, I don't think, you know, I think if I had, I was in so many circles and so many big moments where it could have gone the wrong way, you know, and every career, you know, from the biggest to the smallest has big ups and downs. Mm-hmm. You know, you're only one movie away, so you can be John Travolta and, you know, not getting anybody calling you, and then Quentin Tarantino offers you Pulp Fiction, you know, and it changes your life. It's like every day is an adventure being a film actor if you've, I think, built a body of work. And I've liked to, my life, I've always wanted to work with different kinds of filmmakers. So like when John Waters offered me Cecil B. DeMented, I wanted to work with John Waters. I didn't want to, you know, not work with him because it wasn't going to be $100 million movie. You know, I wanted to work with him because he wrote it for me, and he's an artist. And I want, at the end of the day, I want to have, you know, I want to look, well, wow, I worked with Oliver Stone, Michael Mann, John Waters, you know, this one, Sofia Coppola. You know, for me, it's about the longevity and the body of work. And in there, you're going to have huge peaks, and you're going to have, you know, maybe some lows, but you know, you fight through it, and that's part of the whole process. It's pretty much a game once you get into it, and if you're good at what you do and navigate it, you know. But I'm really lucky with, you know, I never look back on the decisions that I might have made a mistake on, or you know, you just kind of move forward. But I've also taken some risks that I was proud of when they told me not to. Like the agents, my agents at the time told me, don't do the John Waters movie, do this other movie with, I think it was Vin Diesel. It was called Knock Around Guys. It was like a gangster movie. It wasn't very good. But I did the John Waters movie, and we were in Cannes. We were a midnight screening, sold out of, you know, 15-minute ovation. It was like the action, John Waters action movie. I was like, yeah, I'm doing this. You know? And we launched so many cool careers out of that movie. Michael Shannon, Maggie Gyllenhaal. So many people were in that movie. So it was cool. Melanie Griffith, obviously.
So as an actor, and you mentioned a list of some of the directors you worked with, and there's some great ones, how do you, you know, approach working with a director? Because every director has a different style. You know, I mean, I haven't done as much as you have, but when you work with Kevin Smith, he's wide open to interpretation. Mm. When you work with this director, maybe they want everything done exactly to the page with no improv.
Oh, yeah.
Do you just adapt to the director and let the director take control of the project?
I think, you know, if you're working, I don't know Kevin that well, but if you're working with somebody like him, he has a style, he has a formula that he likes to work with. You know, you work with a foreign director, maybe in England, that is an improv, you know, like, you know, a Mike Lee, who just basically his actors write the script, right, through this whole workshop process.
Really?
You work with Sofia Coppola, and her movies tend to be very short scripts and minimal writing, but, you know, there's some crucial that you can see the beginning, middle, and end, and it's scripted, but it's not 110 pages, it's, you know, maybe 50 pages. So, you know, every experience is different. I like to just go with my director. I feel the vibe. Some are mean, you know. Some are mean to get what they want out of you, you know. I mean, Oliver Stone was pretty tough with me on World Trade Center. He's like, is that all you got, Stevie? And I was like, Jesus, what the? And he's like, come on, is this why I had you come in and do this? And I was like, oh, wow, all right. I guess I thought I was being good in that take. Let me go again. But I like working with different directors.
Is that like the captain of the team?
Yeah.
Captain of the ship, right?
The director,
adapt.
To me, is the most important element of the movie. What's on the page is pretty important. Mm. And then who's crafting it, you know, because, you know, as an actor, my job's to perform and my job's to lay it down for them. But they're guiding me and I'll give them what they want. But I need my director to know what he's doing, you know.
G'day, I'm Justin Wolfers, host of the Platypus Economics podcast. If there's one thing I've learned from a career teaching economics, it's that your life is shaped by economic currents you'll never see. A single price tag can explain things 1,000 experts can't. People who understand economics, they make better decisions in their careers, their finances, their relationships, and their communities, and I want that for you. Listen to and follow Platypus Economics, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Who are some of your favorite directors you've worked with?
Oh, man, I've worked with so many, but I loved working with Sofia Coppola. She was it was the most gentle, kind of beautiful set I'd ever been on. It was like very small and intimate.
What movie was that?
A movie called Somewhere, which takes place at the Chateau Marmont. It was a big movie, foreign, but it didn't. We won Venice. We won the Gold Lion in Venice, and Tarantino gave it to us. But in America, we did all right, but I mean, it's a beautiful movie. It's maybe one of her best, and I love working with Michael Mann. I did Public Enemies with him. I played Johnny Depp's right hand man in that, and Homer Van Meter, and that was a blast. I mean, he's one of my favorite kind of big directors as far as his scope. And but I love, you know, I love small movies too. I mean, you know, I mean, that's been really what's the most exciting is it hasn't just been one thing, you know. I had a great time working on True Detective too. I mean, that was to me the best written TV show.
Excellent, yeah.
Best part I've was given in a long time, and I credit Nick Pizzolatto for that. I mean, he's just one hell of a writer. They don't exist really like that.
First time I saw you, besides the aforementioned Different Strokes,
some of my best work
was on Backbeat, where you played
a great movie,
and you played Stuart Sutcliffe, who was the fifth Beatle that passed away of a brain tumor before the Beatles made it. Couldn't really play; he was more of one of John's art friends. Great performance on that. How do you approach playing a real life person?
That was gnarly, just because I'm an American, you know.
Right,
there you go. And, you know, I go over there, and everybody's a Scouser and from Liverpool, including Ian Hart, who's brilliant, who played Lennon and all the... And Ian Softley, who's a Brit, who directed that movie and did such an amazing job. And I don't know. They were casting in England, you know. A lot of the Brits that are famous now, the Ewan McGregors and some of the guys that were around my age... had auditioned for it, but they were also searching in America. I think my name at the time maybe helped. I was coming off Power of One, so I think they needed a little something because they were going with some unknowns out of Liverpool. And it was such a beautiful script, and I didn't know about Stuart Sutcliffe. I mean, I knew about John Lennon and the Beatles because my dad was a huge fan, and he still is, thinks Lennon and McCartney are the best songwriting team of all time. And I would agree with that. I just was this Yankee going in there, and there was a lot of mean shit written about, like, what are they even doing to this? You know, the English hated me. And then when the movie came out, they embraced me. And I worked hard on that accent, and Ian Hart took me under his wing and went to Liverpool, and I just dug deep. And when I got back to L.A., you know, I had this meeting. It was a big meeting with Sidney Pollack, who's no longer with us, great director, actor, And Tom Stoppard, who was this, you know, incredible writer, and they thought I was English. And I was like, no, man, I'm from the Valley. I was a Studio City guy. I mean, I just act, you know. And they were blown away, and they were really cool. And like I said, it was kind of weird that in my first two big movies,
I was playing in English. I was like, when can I get to play just me?
and not have
to worry about this voice thing.
You know? You have to go to a dialect coach for that?
Yeah, I had this lady who worked with me on Power of One and on Backbeat named Julie Adams, who was just epic. And she really, for me at that early age, I credit a lot of my work and my kind of infrastructure of how I approach things to that woman.
Mm.
And I don't talk to her anymore that much, but man, she was a genius. She got me in tune with kind of, you know, a lot of things everything comes from your diaphragm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you talk up here, everything's coming from here, your head, and da-da-da-da, and it's not really connected. If you kind of are connected to a part, it's got to come from there. And once it comes from there, then you're connected. And so that's how she would approach accents. She worked with Jodie Foster. I mean, I was very lucky to meet her at that age. And she gave me a tool system that I still use.
I remember reading when Backbeat came out that Paul McCartney actually gave you props for your performance.
Yeah, he was really nice. I think in the end, he didn't really love the movie because Paul's kind of portrayed a little dorky in the movie. You know, the movie's really a Stu Lennon.
Yeah.
Astrid, who was the woman that kind of, you know, first cut their hair in a mop top and was very ahead of her time. She was this really incredible German photographer. She shot all the early photos of the Beatles. This was right before they kind of took over.
Very influential in their whole personas and looks. Yeah.
And when Stu died, boom, they went to, you know, Love Me Do came out, and it was 1962, and they took over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really... it was really a beautiful relationship I got to form with Astrid. That was what was cool about playing a real person like that, was I just connected with a lot of the real people. George Harrison really liked the movie.
Yeah, that's great.
That was cool. But, I mean, I was always a big Lennon fan. And George Harrison. I mean, I love the Beatles.
Yeah, that's great. Was Blade kind of your first big break, the first big movie that you were in?
Yeah, that was like the first big commercial kind of high-profile movie I said yes to, because I had just done the Jack movie, and I was kind of doing these cool, you know, big movies, studio movies, but they weren't like, you know, concept comic book or action movie. You know, they weren't designed for 3,000 cinemas or whatever at that time. So Blade, I had a meeting with Steve Norrington, who I loved when I first met him, the director, and I knew he was going to be ahead of his time and kind of set the tone for something. I didn't grow up as a big comic book dude, so I wasn't a nut for that. I actually was as a kid loved WWF.
And
I had I'm serious. I had the ring.
Yeah.
I had dolls. I had the Jimmy Snuka and the Iron Man Sheik. I had the Hulk Hogan. You know, I had my dudes. Remember the ring?
Yeah, LJN was the company.
Dude, I had the whole shit. I love that shit. And I grew up really liking that stuff and Legos and some other stuff. I never got into comics, but you know, I knew Blade was cool. I loved The Lost Boys. That was kind of my movie as a kid growing up, that I was like, damn, Kiefer Sutherland's so cool.
You kind of resemble him in a way.
Jason Patrick, they're kind of cool. You know, the music's cool. And I liked the movie Joel Schumacher made, and when it was a big part of my childhood, so I was like, yeah, I want to play a modern-day vampire with you, Steve. And they offered me the most money I'd ever made. So to answer your question, yeah, it was kind of the biggest movie I'd done. And I thought, I was really nervous. I thought, oh, this is the end of my career. I'm just going to be a sellout. And, you know, and everybody's like, just relax, Steve. You can go do your other movie. And I was like, I know, but I care, you know. And I was just always, like, really passionate, maybe too much sometimes. But, yeah, the movie became a big hit, and it really set the bar for what we got today. And, I think Matrix 1 and Blade 1 really changed all that shit, you know?
Right.
If you really look back, that moment, those two movies, I mean, all of it followed after that.
How do you mean it changed?
Just the way they were made, you know, the way they were shot, edited, you know, there's something going on in Matrix 1 and there's something going on in Blade 1.
Gotcha.
It was grounded, yet big and a spectacle, but it was grounded with characters, you know, in that first Matrix and Blade 1. If you go back, that you know, and a lot of people, you know, see that. But I mean, there was just something going on then. And Norrington, I think he's one of the greatest directors around, but he's just such an alien, you know. He wouldn't do big Hollywood movies. You know, he just hates.
It does
Hollywood,
make sense, you know? Though, not to interrupt you, what you were saying, because I was thinking about that as you mentioned it. It kind of made the sci-fi horror comic book movies legit, in that they don't have to be like Christopher Reeve's Superman, which is a great movie, but people aren't going to take it as seriously because it's a comic movie. Whereas Blade, the way it was shot, was so incredibly visually excellent, great performances.
Just wild shit like, you know, Blood Club and the New Order track and just the timing. Yeah. And then after the movie came out, you know, it wasn't like it was a huge blockbuster when it came out. I think it made $100 million and then a couple hundred overseas, but it then became what it became. And then they spawned all the sequels, and I wasn't around for those, but neither was Steve. But Steve Narrington is a gem, and that's why I did it. You know?
There's a great steakhouse in Tampa where I live called Burns Steakhouse. Ooh. And whenever you go in there, all you're going to think of is the blood room opening scene from Blade. Every time I go in there, I'm expecting one of these days they're going to shut the doors and it's going to be a vampire massacre. Really? One of the great scenes of all time that scene. Such a great scene.
And the steakhouse has a vibe.
It's got it's red. It's kind of old, archaic Victorian.
Kind of lofty. Dark.
Every time you go on, all I do is think of the scene.
Nice.
You know? Yeah.
That's awesome.
When you take a role like that, do you have a vibe that this is going to be? This is going to be something?
I mean, I knew that there was a great studio involved. I knew the script was cool, and I thought the character was pretty cool. And then Steve, you know, gave me total freedom to, you know, I don't know how happy David Goyer, the writer, was, because Steve was just like, you know, make it your own. And then I kind of chopped into things and trying to, you know, gave it my own rhythm. But Steve just gave me complete freedom in, like, my penthouse. Like, who do you want to, you know, bite and kill? You know, who do you want to throw? I said, well, maybe I'll come over here and I'll bite her and throw her in the pool. And then I'll go over here and I'll get a little cappuccino. And then I'll come over here and kill this guy. And, you know, and he was like, great, mate, great, we'll film it. And, you know, I was like, oh, okay. And so, you know, it was like, you know, you had a lot of great freedom. And then, you know, also my favorite, one of my heroes, Kris Kristofferson, was in the movie.
Yeah.
Who knew my dad, but I had never got to meet him. And then I got to kill Kris Kristofferson, which kind of, you know, or at least put him in a coma, and that was sad because I love the guy. But then we ended up making two other movies together. He was a friend of mine. I miss him, but he was, what a legend Kris Kristofferson is. But
I think it's interesting, too, because you mentioned, once again, we get it, so you're a true actor in that you care about the parts. It doesn't matter how big the movies are or aren't, but it's almost like a Johnny Depp. You mentioned working with Johnny, where Johnny played the pirates, billions of dollars of revenue for these hit movies, which I think allows him to go make small little movies. And I think Blade probably allowed you to make more of those types of movies because you had this main hit on your resume.
Yeah. I mean, Johnny, I even asked him at the time, I said, I should do a John Waters movie, right? And he's like, yeah. The best, because he did one.
He did one, Crybaby.
And so, like, but Johnny would always do smaller movies and, you know, still does. And, you know, maybe not during the pirate stuff, but he still would, you know, be adventurous and do, you know, he believed in directors, characters, you know, he's a true artist. You know, Johnny, he's a really gracious, sweet man. I mean, he was to me, and he's been a dear, you know, pretty good friend over the years, and I love the movie we made together, and hope we can work together again. But yeah, no, he had the ideal kind of franchise, because in a way he made Jack Sparrow his own, but he got to live it through three, you know, enormous films, and they didn't like what he was doing at first. You know, that's a famous story. They thought he was drunk, and what's going on? We're going to fire this guy. And he's like, no, just trust me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because I remember the head of Disney at the time, I had done a movie for Disney, a thriller, Cold Creek Manor, and Dick Cook took me out to lunch. He was a very nice guy. He was running the studio at the time. You know, he was the boss. You know, it was a lunch with Dick Cook. Oh, okay. I go to lunch, and he told me the story. He's like, we were going to fire Johnny. You know? And he said, please, just give me a chance. You know, and he kept with doing this character, and then boom, you know, it becomes what it becomes. So it's like, that's pretty cool. It's like rare, you know, because it could have gone the other way. Mm-hmm. It could have just been like, fire him, get another guy. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you're playing in that with that much money involved, you know, I understand it's a business, but I'm glad they listened to Johnny and I'm glad they believed in what he was doing.
Have you done that before with some of the characters you've played, made some real radical choices?
I never went that crazy. Yeah. You know, I always pretty much deliver what I think's expected on the page. You know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I made some choices that were ballsy, you know, that people, you know, but then and then they accepted. But, you know, I've never really done a franchise like Pirates where I've never really done sequels, you know. I've always done the first one, and I've never really done a sequel or been cast in a sequel, I don't think. Yeah.
You mentioned World Trade Center, which is another movie that I thought was really good. Obviously, Michael Pena and Nick Cage is in that as well. Who are some of the actors that you worked with that kind of, I mean, acting is very much a team sport in a lot of ways. Who challenged you and made you raise your game as an actor?
I mean, I'd say, Dennis Hopper, Harvey Keitel, Jack being the most nervous I've ever been and who taught me the most, I think.
Was Jack?
Yeah. And, Al is you know, we have some really great scenes in this new movie we did called Lear Rex, which is him playing King Lear. So it's Shakespeare, but on a big level, and it's a big cast. You know, it's Peter Dinklage plays the fool, you know, Jessica Chastain plays Goneril. I mean, it's a very operatic. You know, I mean, Shakespeare's a little, you know, but it's very accessible, and Al's just brilliant in it, and. I play a guy named Poor Tom who meets up with Al as a vagabond in a cave, and Al takes a liking to me as he's losing his mind as Lear, and it's a beautiful, you know, we did about six big scenes together, and from that we've created a really nice friendship, so that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what I take away more than, you know, I mean, money's money, you know, things are expensive, you gotta make money, right, but at the end of the day, it's really about the, I think, the experiences, the, you know, what you leave behind, and you know, that's kind of dope, you know.
Are you intimidated when you see that, you know, oh my gosh, it's going to be Al Pacino as being cast?
I get nervous. I was like, I better not drop a line. This Shakespeare shit was hard, you know, and I had a lot of lines, so I ran those lines with Josh, my friend, on that, and we were in the hotel room, and just kept going. I was like, God damn, I better not, you know.
Because you get in your head, too. If you mess up that first line, then you're like, oh, no, everyone's looking at me.
I just didn't want to mess up the rhythm, you know, because, you know, but, and they're, what's cool is there's so much going on in King Lear and so many characters, but our scenes are pretty intimate, you know. Mm-hmm. We're in a cave, and it's just Dinklage looking at me, and Al and me, you know, and it's pretty cool, and we're in crazy outfits.
Shakespearean outfits and all that sort of stuff.
A lot has changed since Bob's Discount Furniture opened its first store in 1991, but not the way they do business, aka the Bob's way. 35 years later, Bob's still carries today's latest trends at 90s-era prices, like the Aspen sofa for just $399 with over 2,000 five-star reviews. Plus, it comes in two sizes and is the same price no matter which you choose. So everyone gets a seat no matter how big your 90s grunge band is. So stop in and celebrate 35 years of top-rated styles only at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Let's talk a little about The Righteous Gemstones, which
was
another amazing show that you played a great character in, coming in kind of towards the last few seasons.
I had so much fun on that. I mean, Danny and his team are awesome. You know, they're just such good guys. He called me out of nowhere, and I was like, what? Danny McBride wants to talk to me? And I was like, he's one of my favorites, and I didn't know him. I'm not part of that
crew.
You know? And he called me, and he's like, he flipped over that old Henry movie back then, you know, and he was like, you know, you want to come play with me on this show, and, you know, you'd be my nemesis, and I'm like, yeah, dude, send me some stuff, let me read this thing, and then, you know, season three, when I pop up, there's some great stuff, but there's a lot going on, so when season four was coming, I said, well, let's, you know, I want to get a little deeper with you on this relationship, let's, you know, if there's a way to do it, you know, I want to jam, and he wrote some great shit, and so season four I had a blast
because you play the rival
preacher, yeah. I'm like a Joel Osteen and a Lamborghini, and you know what I mean. And me and him go head to head, but yeah, no, he's such a great dude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the funnest guy to hang out with, and his team is fantastic, and the actors on that show are just, I mean, from Edie,
so
who plays Joe, you know, Judy, I mean, just, you know, Walton, who plays Baby Billy. I mean, I didn't get to work with all of them, but I most of my stuff's with Danny, but, and then he ended the show, so that, but, you know, I look forward to working with him again. I mean, we're buddies, and he's the sweetest guy, so.
I mean, that's
was a gem.
It's such a great universe that he creates in all of his shows, where they're, you know, very comedy based, but then also there'll be some really serious drama in there that just takes you a complete left turn.
Yeah, he just likes to, you know, not do what you'd expect. You know,
yeah,
sometimes, but he's just so funny. You know, he's just so naturally funny and so nice. You know, I mean, literally, that was maybe in my whole life. That was one of the smoothest, greatest relationships I made as far as just positive crew that I could be around. Maybe because it's also a comedy and people are having fun and laughing a lot of the time and trying to be
it's quiet. It's so preposterous at times. It's
so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I come from sets like True Detective where everybody's like ready to kill themselves. They're heavy and you know, we're over budget. And it's, you know. And, you know, Danny, we're in Charleston. We're in his neck of the woods, and we're his team and his crew. And it's, you know, it was dope. It was so good.
Yeah, I mean, that once again, just to see you in those ridiculous garb and the outfit. And
yeah,
all that
was
sort of
my
stuff.
Favorite stuff was the cape and pistol stuff, because I like my turquoise.
That's right. Yeah, the cape and pistol. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As we start to wind down, do you still ever have to audition for things?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, True Detective, you know, I think Nick Pizzolatto threw my name in the mix because they hadn't, you know, they had cast Mahershala Ali, who had just won the Oscar for Moonlight, and he was playing the lead, and they needed his partner, and it had been a while since season one and season two, right, which were kind of tight together on a massive success. So season three, Nick took a long time to write, and he worked with David Milch, who's a great writer, who wrote Deadwood and all those great shows. And they called me in, and they said, would you lay it down? And I said, True Detective? Yeah, I'll lay that down. You know? So, you know, I'm not going to go and lay something down unless I believe in it.
Right.
And I feel like I've done enough shit, they can see what I can do. Yeah, you know, like, Jesus Christ. But, you know, I'll fight for a role if they want me to. Yeah.
Did they just want to see what your take was on the role, or have you just
had me read it? Yeah. I read it down, and the next thing I know, we were doing a deal, like a test deal, and I went to HBO, and then I did it again for, you know, a room like maybe as big as this, but. Well, I'm sitting on a stage with the casting director, the brilliant Vicky Thomas, and she read Mahershala's part, and I did the scenes, and I'm like, and they're like, you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do this. And then it was great, because it kind of saved me. You know, I was in a pretty, maybe the darkest spot of my life, because I lost my little brother, and that really was painful for me, because it wasn't something I knew. It was an accident. Mm. And so I find that those are the hardest deaths, you know, because you know, you have time, you know, you have, when you have time with somebody, you can, you know, I was able to spend 2 years with my mom, take her to Paris.
Right.
Because I knew she was heading out, but like my brother, 40 years old, that shouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. So that made me angry. And I didn't really want to act or anything. So it had to be something pretty damn good, like True Detective, to get me to come. And so I was in a pretty, you know, vulnerable spot. And the timing, and in a weird way, it was a year after my brother's passing. And they gave me the gig. And I was like, all right, well, this is meant to be. You know, I'm going to do this for Andrew. And I'm going to do this because this is what I do. And he wouldn't want me to sit here in a black hole, you know. So
it's interesting.
It really picked me up. A lot of roles have picked me up. You know, it's been like therapy, you know.
It's
kind of weird being an actor.
Cathartic for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Actors give a lot to their performances, and then the movie stops, and they're left kind of empty sometimes at the end. You're at home, and it's done. Oh, wow. Who am I? Now what? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I'm going to go play a zombie in this. it's a weird life. You know?
it is hard. Once again, the projects I've been involved with, not as a quarter of what you've done, but you get to know someone really well. You make friends with them. Mm. You spend, you know, 6 a.m. in the morning in the makeup chair, and you do the part, and you do the role.
Yeah.
And then when it ends, you might not see him for a long time. Oh, yeah. And also, too, what's next? Like, well, now I got to start from scratch again and find another gig.
Yeah, it's an odd thing.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
You know?
The more stable gig as an actor would be to be on a network TV show that goes on for, you know, 20 years, like Law and Order, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they have really solid schedules. You know what I mean? Like, an actor like me, I don't know where I'm going to be. You know, I might be in Morocco. I might be in London. I don't know. You know, where am I going? Okay, Pacino. Oh, wow. Jesus, the phone, you know, like, they just offered me some movie with Kate Beckinsale. I was like, what movie? Oh, okay. I never know what the hell's going on. But it's in the hands of the gods. But
that's right.
I love doing what I do, you know.
Last few things for you. Yeah. When you come to conventions like this, what do people... what do they talk to you the most about? Which movies or parts?
It's kind of a new kind of game for me. This I've done a few a few years ago, and then I've, like this year I've done the most I've ever done, thanks to our friend Peter, nice man,
who we both
work with.
Thank you, Peter.
Handsome gentleman.
He's not watching
black
us.
Black blazer in the back. He's not here. He's talking to his other clients.
He's not going
to
waste his time watching us.
Thanks, Peter. love you guys. You know, there's really random different ones. I mean, a lot of the time I've done mostly the horror ones.
Yeah.
But I've done some pop culture ones too. But I haven't done that many. I mean, I did the big one in Dallas. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, most people there like Blade, The Gate.
Right.
And then the girls that kind of want maybe a Britney Spears video
picture
or, you know, Cold Creek Manor. And then like, you know, some, odd ones want some random movie that they have a picture of, or no, The Blob and Blade. So like, there's a picture where like my head is, and I'm like, you want that picture? Are you sure you want that one? All right, I mean, I'll sign it for you. You know? But what I like too is they're really nice, and I've always liked people that go to movies, and my movies in particular, and that like the work, because I don't make the movies just for me. I make them for people.
Yeah,
you know? I make them for people to feel things, and whether we're in a genre movie, whether we're in a movie like Blade, or we're in a drama, or we're in a comedy like Gemstones, you know, you go with the different vibe you're in, and like you were talking about the different directors.
Yeah,
and that's cool. I mean, I'm really liking the comedy sometimes because I like it because I play it straight, you know, kind of like De Niro and Meet the Parents, and it comes off pretty funny.
It's funnier that way.
Yeah, so like when I would look at Danny, sometimes I would just be like, I couldn't, like, you know, and I'm like, stop, okay. You know, and then we go, and he's just so funny. But I really like bouncing. I like bouncing in that world a little bit lately, and I have a pretty funny comedy called What the F*** is My Password coming out. either end of this year or next year, but it's really cool. Steve Pink directed it, and he it's with Alexander Skarsgård.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, Alexander Ludwig.
Mm.
Sorry, not Skarsgård. Ludwig, who was in Vikings, and he's doing the new White Lotus. And anyway, I play his dad, and it's funny. It's about a guy who, my son, who in graduation, I guess, put a bunch of money into Bitcoin. Forgot he put the 10 grand into the Bitcoin. Now he's got like 140 million and forgot his password on the hard wallet. And you get 5 chances. So the movie's like really clever.
That's great.
It's like building. And I haven't seen my son in a while, and I'm kind of a degenerate father. And he comes and he tries for me to help him remember what the password could be at that time in our lives. And I'm like, son, I don't even remember you being my son, but I love you, and no. But anyway, we find, and the whole movie's ramping up to this password thing, so it's kind of funny.
Sounds great, yeah. How big was the Aerosmith video?
Well, that was pretty
huge. Was it Crying or Crazy?
Crying.
Yeah. Massive. Those, that trilogy of videos he did with Alicia Silverstone, those were massive at the time.
Marty Kullner was cool. He was the director, and I don't know what movie I was just finishing, but it always seemed like a video would pop up after a certain movie. Like I'd done Cold Creek Manor, and then the Britney Spears movie popped up, or a video popped up. You know, I had just done some movie, and then the Alicia Silverstone was obviously first. That was the first video I did, and it became so big.
It's huge.
And that was fun. You know, those videos are easy. I mean, they're just one day and 2 days. I think 2 days, and
But it raised your profile.
Yeah, you know? No, yeah. I mean, so much, you know, that was like the Britney one. When that came around, I was like doing a lot of movies and I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. And my agent was like, no, this would be good to do for, you know, the younger generation. I was like, oh, for Christ's sakes. I'm like, I'm not going to be on the back of a motorcycle with this girl. I want to hear the song. And so I heard the song and I was like, damn, that's a good song every time. And she wrote it and I was impressed. And I said, yeah. And then David LaChapelle, who's awesome photographer, and he had shot me a couple times for magazine shit, and he said, you want to do this? And I said, yeah, sure. So I went down there, and she was really sweet, you know, Brittany, and did this video and saved her in the bathtub, and that then became this big video. And I was like, become the video guy. And then I said like no to a couple because I was just like, all right, enough of the videos. Yeah, right. Jesus. You know?
Last question for you. You've done so many parts and roles in movies. Is there one that stands out for you as maybe a little underrated that people didn't?
Yeah, there's one movie that I made, and the Ryan Ross is in here. He co-directed. Well, he directed it. I kind of cracked the story with him and wrote all the original music and acted in it. But the movie's called Wheeler, Wheeler. And I believe, like, at the end of my life, that'll probably be this hidden gem. People have seen it. It got reviewed well, but it's pretty small. But the album's pretty cool. And Wheeler Bryson is his own person on, like, you know, Spotify and on everything, and he has kind of a loyal little fan base. But I never really took it. I didn't play live, really. I mean, I played the Ryman when the movie came
That's
out
amazing,
in Nashville.
Yeah.
We played a couple really cool special gigs, but I was working as an actor and I couldn't, like, do the Wheeler tour. But basically, I went under prosthetics as an exercise with no script, just a kind of an idea, a treatment. And we put it on its feet, and we had budgeted, you know, 15 days of makeup or 14 days of makeup, not long, because every day the makeup costs a fortune. I had, like, Academy Award guys, Christian Tinsley, doing the makeup and stuff. Mm. And we did this movie, and it could have fallen flat on its ass, but I kind of got up and threw a hidden assassin that my brother knew, because we had some connections in Nashville. I said, just vouch for this songwriter, Wheeler Bryson, you know, and just let me try to do it like Sacha Baron Cohen would have done.
Right, right.
A Barat or something, but where I could get signatures and sign releases, but, you know, be in this documentary that this songwriter from Texas is trying to accomplish, and he's just trying to be heard, you know. And so we went down there, and people started really digging him, and then we had a beginning, middle, and end, and we, you know, cheated a few things. I got Kris Kristofferson to do a cameo in that, because that Wheeler's, you know, hero was
right.
Kris Kristofferson, so Chris did it. But most of the people weren't in on it, and it was like a full-on experiment that really ended up being a great movie.
It's amazing.
And we had a premiere in Nashville. We invited all the lady that made me the eggs in the scene that didn't know she was going to be in a motion picture came to the premiere, you know, and she's like, I had no idea you were Steven. You know, and I'm like, well, you know, that was the point. You know, and I got to say, it was one of the coolest acting things I ever did, because no crew, just, you know, two camera guys, red cameras, 4K or whatever, 2K, whatever it was at the time. Ryan, a few of us, my makeup man, hero.
And that's it.
And it was beautiful. And that was cool. So I sat in the Palm restaurant, you know, the Palm.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, I invited my dad, you know, we set it up to where he was going to be at the Palm and I was going to meet him. But I never showed, but Wheeler was there. And I'm sitting right here. My dad's where you are. And I sat there for a good 40 minutes while my dad had a vodka cranberry waiting for me. And I was just like, how you doing, man? And I had a whole conversation with my dad. And that's where I tested the makeup. And I knew, all right, we're in. We could do this, you know.
That's
and
amazing.
So, like, yeah, and it worked out. But I would recommend that. You can get it on different platforms. It's really, really a special movie.
That's
totally
awesome.
Fake. I mean, a totally fake person that I created, but really cool music. And I got to write the main song with my brother, who was a real great songwriter. So that was cool.
Steven Dorff, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.